T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Happy New Year, and we're off to a cold start in 2022. We saw it coming. It has arrived, as you heard in the news a moment ago. Gearing up for the NHL's Winter Classic at Target Field tonight, and could go down as the coldest outdoor game in NHL history. And we have a reporter who's going to be covering Craig Schrepfer, a producer. He's in on the morning news, Monday through Friday here on News Talk, 830-WCCO. He is going to be on the ground at Target Field, and we'll get a report and a scene setter on that a little bit later on in the program. Also coming up later today, Steve Carney is going to take us outdoors, and we're in prime time for ice fishing, that is for sure. So we'll get an update on that from Steve. Mark Manny, head boys coach, Andover Hockey. The Huskies playing well again here this season. So Mark Manny's going to join us. Marcus Fuller covers Golden Gopher basketball for the Star Tribune. And the Gophers had a very good run in the non-conference season. They've already played 2 Big Ten games. They split with Michigan State and had that big win at Michigan. Now they jump into the Big Ten schedule very quickly. They were supposed to play Illinois at the Barn on Sunday, but that game has been moved to Tuesday. So Marcus Fuller scheduled to join at 4:35. And then, as we mentioned, the Hammer from Target Field as we gear up for the NHL's Winter Classic following the news at 5. And then John Millay, media specialist with the Minnesota State High School League, scheduled to join. So look forward to visiting with all those folks as we move through the day here on News Talk 830-WCCO. There's been a great deal of talk about the weather and the Winter Classic. And throughout the course of the week, sitting in for Henry Lake earlier in the week, and then Mike Max late in the week. Not my cup of tea. I'm probably not going to sit out in the cold. I don't have tickets. And one of the reasons I didn't try to get tickets was this idea, it could be really cold. It's New Year's Day in Minnesota. And while I have some gear, and I do have snow pants, and I do have a heavy winter coat, probably not for me. Now, if it was a day in the 20s pushing 30 degrees, I might consider it. But they have moved the game to the evening. Generally, the NHL's Winter Classic is a noon start, and it was on NBC, but tonight, 6 o'clock our time. And I know in some of the warm weather cities, the thought was, it's better to move it to the evening, because anybody who's had a backyard rink or skated outside knows that even in December, January, and February, when the sun is beating down on the ice, even on a cooler day, it has an impact. And I think they've learned that as well. So now they just figure it's a whole lot easier to not play this game until nightfall, even though we're getting brutally cold weather here in the upper Midwest. And one of the things is the wind chill warnings and wind chill advisories we've seen now for several days. And we've got an update on the map where the wind chill warning is surrounding the Twin Cities. So it just goes to show that the heat island is a real impact. The heat island is a real deal. And here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, a wind chill advisory. But for instance, a wind chill warning not that far out of the Twin Cities, including Wright County. The wind chill warning, and here are the details on that. For areas just north and then northwest, west, and even south of the Twin Cities. For example, Rochester is under a wind chill warning. And that wind chill warning runs from 6 this evening until 10 a.m. Sunday. Wind chills as low as 40 below. And this includes portions of northwest Wisconsin, central and east central Minnesota. And it runs from 6 tonight until 10 on Sunday. And the dangerous wind chills could cause frostbite and exposed skin in as little as 10 minutes. So it is certainly a dangerous weather situation. Now here in the heart of the Twin Cities area, and this is pretty much Hennepin and Ramsey and Washington counties, even Anoka County is under that warning. But in the heart of the Twin Cities area, including Target Field, there is a wind chill advisory in effect. And that starts at 6 and runs until 10 tomorrow morning. Wind chills as low as 35 below zero. And the dangerously cold wind chills could cause frostbite and exposed skin as little as 10 minutes. So it's still a dangerous weather situation. So once again, if you're headed to Target Field, by all means, take care. It is 3:13 here at News Talk, 830-WCCO. We appreciate you tuning in today. Let's get you up to date on the college football scoreboard while we have a moment. And right now, Iowa leading Kentucky 17-13, under 2 to go in the game. But Kentucky has a first and goal at the 6-yard line. That's at the Citrus Bowl in Orlando. And it looks like Kentucky is going to grab the lead late, but they've given Iowa time. Here are some of the finals already today. In the Las Vegas Bowl, or on Thursday night, Wisconsin beat Arizona State 20-13. Michigan State beat Pittsburgh 31-20 in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. In the Duke's Mayo Bowl, South Carolina beat North Carolina 38-21. The South Carolina coach took a Mayo bath after the game. Not so sure about that. And Purdue beat Tennessee 48-45 in overtime. That may have been the best game of the bowl season so far at the Music City Bowl. And then on Friday, Middle Tennessee beat Toledo 31-24. Coastal Carolina beat Northern Illinois 47-41. Of course, the college football playoff games, a couple of beatdowns. Alabama beat Cincinnati, and Georgia rolled over Michigan. Georgia and Alabama meet for all the marbles, just as everyone expected. On this New Year's Day, let's get you up to date on what's happening in all those games today. And Oklahoma State beat Notre Dame 31-28, or leads Notre Dame 31-28. That's at the Fiesta Bowl out in the Valley of the Sun. As we mentioned, Kentucky's gone ahead of Iowa 20-17 late in the fourth. Arkansas beat Penn State 24-10 in the Outback Bowl. Coming up later on, the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, Ohio State and Utah. And then tonight, the Sugar Bowl, Baylor against Ole Miss. Well, there you go. There still is one big bowl game. And that's a Tax Act Texas Bowl on Tuesday, LSU and Kansas State. And I mean big teams you recognize. And then, of course, the title game a week from Monday night. And that'll be in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium, Georgia and Alabama. So there you go. You're up to date on college football. Quick break. We'll have more here on a Saturday. News Talk, 830-WCCO. Happy New Year, Steve Thompson, producer Carrie Klatt, Mark Fry in the newsroom. Mark Fry a little busy rooting on his Hawkeyes as they try and rally and pull out a win over Kentucky in the Citrus Bowl. Kentucky went on a drive, got a touchdown a moment ago. Still a minute to go in the game down there in Orlando. We're scheduled to talk to Mark later in the hour. Hopefully he's not too grumpy if I wasn't able to pull out the victory. Right now we're joined by Stephen Clark, who joins us from Florida, where it's a whole lot warmer than it is here in Minnesota. Stephen from spaceflightnow.com. Stephen, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Steve.
Yeah, we're below zero here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul. Our official temp, I'll see if I can get an update for you. Our official air temp, 5 below, and the actual wind chill, 22 below zero. I would assume it's a little warmer than that.
It is. I'm actually calling from Texas, visiting family for the holidays, but it is definitely warmer in Texas than it is below zero up there in Minnesota. It's around 75 here right now.
Yeah, much better. And I know you spend a lot of time at Kennedy Space Center and keep an eye on what's happening there. And it has been a busy year indeed. But before we take a look back at 2021 and look ahead to 2022, when it comes to space flight, really the huge story right now in the headline at your site, spaceflightnow.com, the Webb telescope on its way to a spot a million miles away from Earth. And so far, so good in its travels.
Right, yeah, the James Webb Space Telescope, really a once-in-a-generation space mission. It's the biggest telescope ever sent up into space, launched on Christmas morning a week ago today. And it's completed its first week of its mission deploying. This telescope had to be folded up like an origami to fit inside the rocket that it launched on, a European rocket from down in South America. And it's going through this step-by-step procedure to begin unfurling in space. So after the successful launch, it deployed a solar array to start generating power. It's now in the process of deploying its a sun shield, which is the size of a tennis court, and that will allow the telescope itself to be in permanent shadow so there's no interference from light, and also to begin the process of cooling down to super cold temperatures. And that's necessary to complete the science mission, which involves detecting the faint, very faint thermal heat or infrared energy from the first galaxies in the universe more than 13 billion years ago. And this instrument is finely tuned to be able to detect the first light from the first galaxies, which is a kind of an era that astronomers call the cosmic dark ages, because we've never seen anything from this this period of time right after the formation of the universe. So very exciting science mission ahead of for Webb, but it has to get through these critical steps first.
Yeah, and the reason it's going a million miles, or four times the distance of the moon away from planet Earth, is to get into a good cold spot. And I understand it'll be partially shielded by the Earth and by the sun as it orbits the solar system.
Right. Yeah. That the sun shield that I mentioned, it actually unfurled to its full shape just yesterday, very late on New Year's Eve, and that was actually the riskiest part of the mission to be able to deploy that giant sail, which is going to allow the telescope, the mirrors of the telescope. If you imagine, the light will hit the mirror, and then the mirror bounces the light into some detectors deep in the heart of the spacecraft to make these images. Those mirrors and those detectors have to be chilled to almost 400 degrees below zero. And to do that, they have to be permanently shaded from the sun at all times throughout the next 10-year mission. And the sun shield is made of these five layers of Kapton. It's like almost like a plastic, very, very flimsy. And they have these guides that pull the sun shield out like a kite, very, very slowly. Imagine like pushing, it's like pushing a piece of string along a table. You know, it's very indeterministic as you deploy it. NASA's used to deploying things that are rigid in space, like on hinges. So deploying this very flimsy apparatus nearly a million miles away from Earth all by remote control is a very delicate process, and was really kind of nail biting yesterday as it went down. But it did occur yesterday, and now they're in the process of actually kind of tensioning the sun shield and tightening it up to get that perfect shape to shadow the telescope for its science mission. And so far, so good. This is probably one of the most complex things NASA has ever done in space, at least for an unmanned mission, an unpiloted mission. I mean, you know, the Apollo moon landings and the International Space Station aside, this is certainly more complicated by a factor of three or four, just based on the technical complexity, according to NASA, of landing a rover on Mars. So this is a whole different league.
Yeah, it really is extraordinary. And the distance from the Earth, a million miles away, is they do want it away from, you know, any potential interference, because the Earth in itself reflects the sun's energy, and the moon does the same thing. So in reading about this, I understand that's part of the reason they want it so far away.
You're exactly right, Steve. Like, this is a kind of a successor to the Hubble Space Telescope, which has been up for 31 years now, and it's flying very close to Earth, just a few hundred miles up. But it's actually, that telescope is looking at the universe in visible light, the light that the human eye can see. But in infrared, you have to cool the telescope very, very cold to get it away from any sort of, sunlight or anything that can reflect heat or light from the sun, like the Earth or the moon. So it has to be all out there on its own. And that's the reason they selected this location a million miles from Earth. But the drawback, the drawback of that is the Hubble Space Telescope was repaired by astronauts on the space shuttle several times and upgraded. That's the reason it's lasted so long. And the James Webb Space Telescope, once it gets out there, it's going to be outside the reach, at least for any foreseeable future, of any sort of repair job that astronauts can do.
Stephen Clark joining us from spaceflightnow.com. Stephen, quickly, before we run out of time, the highlights from 2021, in your opinion, in the year in spaceflight. There were a lot of them.
Yeah, that's a great question I've been thinking about. And I think at least three things come to mind right off the bat, and that would be SpaceX's advancement with the Starship program down in South Texas, this giant new fully reusable rocket that SpaceX is developing to eventually carry people to the moon and Mars. We saw some major advancements in that this year. They were able to land it for the first time and getting ready to build out the rocket's already built, but they're getting ready to finish the launch pad for an orbital flight of that giant rocket, or the biggest rocket ever built, sometime later this year. Another thing that comes to mind is the landing of the NASA Perseverance rover on Mars back in February, and it carried a little drone, like a little mini helicopter, that actually flew, is still flying, has flown I think over 15 times now through the Martian atmosphere, the first aircraft to fly on another planet. History was made there. That opens up a whole new way of exploring other worlds. And then the other thing this year that comes to mind is civilians in space. In September, SpaceX launched a crew of four non-professional astronauts into orbit, the first time any crew has flown into orbit without any professional astronaut training. And then we saw, of course, your listeners may recall the launch of Jeff Bezos and Richard Branson into space, suborbital space, just to the edge of space over the summer. And, of course, followed by very, very well widely reported flights of William Shatner and Michael Strahan as well later in the year. So the three things that come to mind right off the bat is the advancement of the big new rocket that SpaceX is developing, the rover and the drone on Mars, and then a whole new era of civilian spaceflight.
Yeah, in 2022, we expect to see even more, as you alluded to. Starship hasn't done an orbital mission. We certainly could see that as soon as the first quarter of 2022, if all goes well. We're officially into January, but I know they are chomping at the bit to at least do this launch, and I would expect, no matter how that goes, if it's a success or a failure, that they would try to launch again. So we could see a lot of Starship activity in 2022.
Yeah, indeed. I think that's one story that maybe one of the big stories in both 2021 and 2022 is, you know, SpaceX is beginning to get ready, or they're already well along in getting ready for the first orbital launch of this giant 40-story tall rocket called the Starship from Texas. And hopefully that'll happen in a couple of months, maybe, pending the final approval from the FAA and getting regulatory approval for that, and also finishing up the launch pad, which is nearing completion down there in South Texas. And so that's a big thing looking ahead in 2022. Another one may be the results from the James Webb Space Telescope. If the rest of the deployments go well over the next few weeks and it begins taking images in the spring, could be a whole new, you know, it could be a big surprise on what the James Webb Space Telescope can see, you know, billions of years ago. And also looking at other planets around other stars to see which ones may be conducive to supporting life. That's a very exciting prospect this year as well.
Stephen Clark joining us from spaceflightnow.com. A couple other things to watch in 2022 that come to mind. Number one, NASA's big space launch system has been delayed. It seems like the delays have piled up. The bills have piled up. This has become a very expensive disposable rocket system. When will that fly? And then beyond that, we're still waiting for Boeing and to get their Starliner capsule a test flight, and then ultimately start ferrying astronauts up to the International Space Station. And we really don't have a timeline yet, do we?
For the Starliner, no. I think your guess is probably as good as mine as when astronauts will fly on that spacecraft. You know, SpaceX has been flying astronauts to the space station on a similar, you know, a different design, but a similar capability that Boeing's working on for almost 2 years now. They launched their first astronauts in May 2020, and Boeing, I think, will be lucky to do it this year. I mean, it may be toward the end of the year at the best case when that happens with Boeing. They've flown an unpiloted test flight without astronauts back in 2019 that did not go well due to software issues. And they were on the cusp of launching a second unpiloted flight back in August, and they had issues with valves in the spacecraft. They had to roll the spacecraft back into the hangar and take it off the rocket and do a bunch of inspections and repairs. So, you know, maybe toward the middle of the year, they may be back in a position where they can try an unpiloted flight to the space station to do a final demonstration before NASA signs off putting astronauts on the capsule on the following mission. Regarding the space launch system, the big disposable rocket you mentioned that NASA's developing to carry a crew back into deep space, it seems like that has a better chance, maybe, despite the long delays and cost overruns. Right now, it looks like that has a chance of happening before Starliner carries astronauts, maybe sometime this spring, perhaps best case with that test flight.
Yeah, and a final thought on that. There's been a lot said and written that, you know, is cobbled together parts from the space shuttle era. It's disposable. It's very expensive. You have to wonder, and I know NASA has funding from Congress for a while, but, boy, Stephen, it just seems like with the growing capability of SpaceX and potentially other companies, why wouldn't NASA just say, well, we're going to scrap this and sign a contract with Elon Musk and have him do the work?
I think at some point that's a very strong possibility of happening. The space launch system has a lot of political support because it supports a lot of jobs in a lot of congressional districts, and that's a big way to win congressional support. You know, it has support from both sides of the political spectrum because representatives, Democrats and Republicans, have jobs in their districts that depend on the program. So I think I don't foresee it having a sudden and you know, a sudden death as a program, but I think the writing is starting to be written on the wall right now, and certainly will be very obvious once SpaceX can fly the Starship successfully and pull off a string of successful flights to orbit, and you know, at low cost, much lower cost, you know, a couple of orders of magnitude lower cost than a Space Launch System flight, and with similar, if not better, lift capability as well. So I think you're onto something there. I think that's something that's widely known throughout the space industry, that, you know, the life expectancy of the Space Launch System, this big giant NASA rocket, which you know, may have had a clearer purpose a decade ago when it was first being proposed, but a lot changes in a decade in the space business, and you know, the delays certainly haven't helped as it nears its first flight. Around the same time as the Starship from Elon Musk's SpaceX also nears a first flight.
Yeah, and just the flat-out cost is breathtaking. Billions and billions of dollars have been spent, and that's, to this point, to just build one rocket.
Right.
Stephen, always good to visit with you. Certainly, I check in on your website regularly. I'm a big fan. Happy New Year to you, and hopefully we can visit again soon.
Looking forward to it. Happy New Year.
All right, there he is, Stephen Clark. SpaceFlightNow.com is the website. 3:35, 25 minutes now in front of 4. We are late to the weather break. We will talk more weather. We'll talk Winter Classic. Mark Fry from our newsroom was out in the streets talking to fans headed for the big game tonight at Target Field. And even ran into some Blues fans. We'll have that. And then we'll talk to the folks at the Weather Service about that wind chill advisory for the heart of the metro. Many areas in a wind chill warning tonight through tomorrow morning. We'll get into all of that here on News Talk 830-WCCO. Now, there's no truer statement than maybe tonight at Target Field. Might be a little chilly. Driving the Zamboni for the NHL's Winter Classic. It's been a dream for Wild fans since really the beginning. There's been talks that when is Minnesota going to get the Winter Classic, and finally it's happening tonight. Target Field, they'll drop the puck just after 6, the Wild and the Blues. Mark Fry joins us from the newsroom. And Mark, this really is a big story and a big time, or a long time coming, and they've been preparing Target Field now for weeks.
Yeah, and well, thanks for having me join you, Steve. It's good to talk with you again. And I was just actually watching the final of the Iowa Hawkeye Bowl game in Orlando. It's like 85 degrees there today. So a little different up here today. But you're right. They've been prepping this for several weeks, actually probably, you know, since they ever announced this. But finally got the ice ready to go. The Wild got on there last night. And I think maybe there were a couple issues on the ice, but it sounds like it's ready to go. And the fans are ready to go, too.
Yeah, and it's funny about ice, because we had a backyard rink for years when I was a kid. As a matter of fact, we had a backyard rink when I was a very young kid in St. Paul, just east of Lake Como on Maryland Avenue. My dad would flood a rink, and they'd have friends over, and all the neighborhood kids would play. And then when we moved to Champlin to be closer to my dad's teaching job, we started the tradition up here, and we'd have a backyard rink. And when it got real, real cold like this, 5 below, we'd still be out there and play. Don't get me wrong. But the ice got really chippy.
Yeah.
When it gets really hard and cold, the ice was always better in the teens or 20s. And I would expect during the game tonight, now I know they've got state-of-the-art refrigeration and these people know what they're doing, but I would expect the ice to be a bit of a problem in these bitter cold temps tonight. We'll see.
Yeah, and it's interesting just to, I followed along one of the press conferences where they talked about making the ice, and one of the things they said is sometimes they actually have to warm it up a little bit if it is too cold. So they have their heating elements all around the rink and stuff like that. It's very interesting. You think, you know, not much goes into making ice, but when it's for a world-class event for world-class athletes, you gotta keep in mind their safety. Yep. And sort of just the integrity of the game too.
Yeah, and I would assume they're going to manage that real well, because, like I say, I just remember when we were kids, it would just get rock hard and would chip up when we were out there running around as kids playing pond hockey in the backyard. So we'll see how that plays out. And another part of the story is, you know that the NHL and the Wild, in conjunction with the Minnesota Twins, are going to have every possible safety element for the fans to make sure that there are areas for people to get warm, etc. But that certainly is part of the story, Mark.
It really is. And I was talking with one of the Wild team physicians the other day just about, you know, what are they watching for in the athletes? Because, yep. You know, typically they're inside, you're in a controlled environment. But, you know, once you get outside and it's a whole different story, but obviously the Wild and the Blues players have heated elements on the benches. But a lot of the concern was about the fans just sitting in one spot, really not having the movement like the players do outside. And a couple of fans I talked to outside said they're ready to go. And they have three layers of clothing on, two layers of gloves, hand warmers, feet warmers, all that good stuff, Steve, that I think we've all been to a few cold games in our lives, but nothing when it's like 20 below zero on a wind chill.
Well, and you think not so much about Minnesota Wild fans, where we get used to this sort of thing for bursts in December, January, and February in particular. But if fans came to town from St. Louis, and I saw a tweet from you where you bumped into a couple of Blues fans.
Right, and they were telling me about one Winter Classic, I believe, when the Blues hosted the Blackhawks maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I can't remember exactly what year that was, but they said it was about 46 degrees in that game, and they thought it was chilly then.
Yeah, 46 degrees. We're washing our cars in the driveway.
Right, we're out on patios enjoying our lunch. It's 46 degrees.
Yeah, absolutely. Outdoor lunch is certainly in play on a 46-degree day in January. But like I say, I know all those safety measures are in place. And I kind of joked during the week when I was sitting in for Henry Lake earlier, and then later in the week, Mike Max, that I doubt there's a rental heater within 100 miles that probably hasn't been brought in to help in the concourses, et cetera. Because you know the Twins have the ballpark ready for cool weather games, particularly early, late March, April, May here in the Twin Cities or some of those late fall games. But this is a whole different story for sure.
Well, it makes you wonder, too, if the Twins were to make a World Series or a late playoff run, just chilly it could get in the late fall, too, at Target Field. If obviously there'd be tons of fans and stuff going on and things happening, but it could get pretty chilly for those postseason games. You got to get there first, unfortunately. But obviously that's something to keep in mind, too, for the future, hopefully, success of the Twins.
Yeah, I also think it'll be very interesting to see how TNT portrays it on television, because you know television loves these extreme weather events. For instance, tomorrow night, Lambeau Field in Green Bay, the Packers and the Vikings, you know, they're going to play up the frozen tundra. I know Kirk Cousins on the COVID-19 list and won't be available. But television loves these type of events because, you know, for other parts of the country, they see this and say, this is unbelievable. It really does make great television.
Well, really, the Winter Classic is made for TV. Just some of the, you know, the shots they get are just breathtaking, and a lot of the scenery is just so great to see on TV. And I understand the fans wanting to be there, but I don't know, Steve, if I could find a ticket cheap enough that would get me in Target Field tonight. I don't know if I could do it. Unless it was just unbelievable seat, I don't think I'm going to go sit in section 333 of Target Field and watch a hockey game tonight.
Yeah, and for those people willing to do it, good luck to you. I'll be watching from my couch tonight.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, good to visit with you, and my condolences to the Hawkeyes. That was a tough loss.
Oh, man. Good riddance. Ready to be done with that season, I think. It's so frustrating. But, hey, it looked like they had nice weather, so we'll give them that.
Yeah, for all those folks that made the trip down to Orlando. Mark Fry from our newsroom. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
Quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk to the folks at the National Weather Service about the wind chill advisory for the heart of the Twin Cities, and then that wind chill warning that goes into effect at 6 and continues until 10. Then we'll get a brief warm-up, and then right back into the deep freeze later in the week. Caleb Grunsky is scheduled to join us from the Weather Service in Chanhassen, and we'll get to that in a moment here on News Talk, E3O WCCO. Chilly New Year's Day, our temp hanging in there at 5 below, our wind chill 22 below, and tonight and tomorrow morning, we're on kind of an island, a wind chill advisory surrounded by a wind chill warning. And to talk about that, Caleb Grunsky from the National Weather Service in Chanhassen. And Caleb, thanks for the time and a Happy New Year.
No problem. Happy New Year to you, too.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. Cold snap on New Year's Day, not uncommon. This is not unusual. Kind of a garden variety. Cold front moves in, puts us below zero for a couple of days, and then we'll bounce back pretty quickly earlier in the week.
Yeah, that's true. Tonight is basically going to be the last of the cold snap, the really cold weather. We do have a wind chill warning and in effect for most of western and central Minnesota County and some of southern Minnesota, too, until Sunday morning. And then a wind chill advisory for basically the metro and the rest of our forecast area until also Sunday or also Sunday morning. And we're looking at wind chill values in the advisory between negative 25 and negative 35 below zero. And then in the warning, wind chills below 35 below zero. So not going to be very nice if you're going to be outside.
Yeah, for sure. So it's out for the fans at the Winter Classic. They're certainly going to give it a go. But we see a relatively quick warm-up, and then later in the week, a relatively quick cool-down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll warm up as a warm front passes through on Monday, warm up Monday into Tuesday. Looking like for Monday's highs, we're looking at the end of the 20s for highs, so much different than this weekend. And then Tuesday we warm up even a little bit more into the low 30s potentially. But then by Tuesday night into Wednesday, another cold front passes through and we're back down into the single digits and low teens by Wednesday afternoon. And then again back towards zero and below zero Thursday. So a little bit of a roller coaster of pattern right now.
Yeah, and I know you get out more than about a week. It's really hard to tell, but you know, people are concerned in these parts about, you know, a polar vortex settling in. Do you expect this pattern to continue? Which in all my time, born and raised here, pretty typical. You know, it'll get cold for a while, then we'll bounce back, and it'll get cold again. Do you expect this pattern to continue?
Yeah, at least for the next couple of weeks. Longer range outlooks say that we are favored to be below normal for temperatures through at least mid-January. And then you're right that this is normally the coldest time of year for us, so it's not unusual for us to. I mean, mid-January is when we bottom out. Our average temperature is in the low 20s, which is a far cry from the negative 5 we're at today, but it is not unusual to have cold snaps like this throughout January.
All right. So good news is if you need to get that car cleaned up, you've got a couple of days to do it before it gets cold again later in the week. Well, Caleb, we appreciate the update on the weather, but once again, the wind chill advisory for the heart of the metro area, but some counties in the Twin Cities metro area, particularly North Metro and West Metro, are in that wind chill warning from 6 tonight until 10 tomorrow morning, and then dramatically warmer by Monday. Happy New Year, Caleb, to you and the crew at the Weather Service.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year to you, too.
All right, there he is, Caleb Grunsky, joining us from out there. We'll have all the news. We'll have all the weather. CBS gets us started at 4 o'clock. Mark Fry to follow. And let's get you up to date real quick on big day in college football, as always, on New Year's Day. Late in the fourth, it looks like Oklahoma State's going to beat Notre Dame. 37-28 the score there at the Fiesta Bowl in Arizona. Arkansas beat Penn State at the Outback Bowl 24-10. Tough day for the Big Ten today. Kentucky, late touchdown, beats Iowa 20-17. And then Iowa got the ball with time, and an interception ends it for Iowa. They finished the year 10-4. Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all. And I still think it's a shame that it's not available on over-the-air TV. The fact that some of these games are on cable and you got to pay is just a shame, and the Rose Bowl is one of those. Ohio State against Utah in that one. And then tonight, the Sugar Bowl, Baylor and Ole Miss. And then the college football playoff is set. A couple of yawners yesterday in the college football playoff. Alabama, no trouble with Cincinnati. Just kind of a workmanlike victory. They didn't blow them off the field score-wise, but it was pretty clear who was going to win that football game. Alabama wins. And then Georgia demolishes Michigan down at the Orange Bowl in Miami Gardens, Florida. And I was a little bit surprised. There were people ripping Hard Rock Stadium, the home of the Miami Dolphins and the home of the Orange Bowl now every year, because they built that roof over the stadium with a hole in the top. So if you do get a rainstorm or a thunderstorm, which is pretty common in South Florida, the fans stay dry, but the field is still in the elements. I think they did a great job remodeling that stadium. I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. But there were a couple of people on Twitter that ripped it. I completely disagree with that. And, of course, tomorrow night, huge game for the Vikings. They'll be at Lambeau Field without Kirk Cousins. He's on the COVID list. That was huge talk on Friday and still is a big talk. Sean Mannion will be the starting quarterback. And Green Bay was favored by about a touchdown. Well, now that's jumped to a two-touchdown advantage. The game opened at 6.5. The Cousins news broke, and now it's Green Bay by 13, and the over-unders dropped to 42.5. The good news for the Vikings is it figures to be a weather game. Dalvin Cook has had success, and Dalvin Cook is back. Only chance, big game out of Dalvin. Sean Mannion doesn't turn it over, and the Minnesota defense turns over Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers and wins the turnover battle, maybe a +2, +3, and they've got a shot at Lambeau on Sunday night. It is a long shot. I get it. I'm just trying to be positive to start the new year. It's doable, but it ain't going to be easy on Sunday night football, and the Vikes need a victory in their final two and then a little help to get into the playoffs. All right, we got to run. Once again, we'll start with the news at 4 with CBS, Mark Fry in our newsroom. We'll have another update on that weather. That's a big topic today, obviously. And then we'll go outdoors with Steve Carney here on News Talk. 830-WCCO, Happy New Year.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.